The Evolve with Pete Evans podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. I love exploring the topics that are not traditionally taught at school and take a deep dive into them with my special guests. I invite you to sit back and come along for the ride with an open mind and heart, and please share with your family and friends, as these podcasts may just be the seed from which many things will flourish from. Cheers. We've been using Waters Co. water filters for the last 10 years, and I wholeheartedly trust my family's health with them. Waters Co., established 1977, have personal and domestic water filters, which turns your ordinary tap water into great-tasting, alkaline, ionized mineral water, which removes up to 99.9% of fluoride, heavy metals, chemicals, and bacteria, so you can love your tap water again. The Bio 1000 is the latest edition of the BMP 1000 model and the culmination of over 40 years of experience and research into water filtration by some of the world's leading scientists. Waters Co. was first to market with natural gravity-fed systems, creating alkaline water way back in 1984, and have continued to lead the market in research and development, setting the benchmark for all other brands to follow. Please go to my webpage, PeteEvans.com, to learn more and to receive your special discount from my link on the products page. You're going to love it. Dr. Bear Lando is the founder and formulator for Alpha Vedic. Dr. Lando travelled an eclectic path through athletics and academics in becoming a physician, bioterrain specialist and permaculture farmer. His medical specializations include biological terrain medicine, clinical kinesiology, Japanese meridian therapy, functional movement specialist, craniopathy, visceral manipulation, chiropractic medicine, New German medicine, oxidative therapies, metabolic typing, and endobiogenics. Dr. Lando was noted amongst his peers for his innovative clinical strategies and developed an international following for people suffering from chronic degenerative conditions seeking his services as a bioterrain medicine and functional movement specialist. In more recent years, he earned his Master Gardener and Permaculture Design certification and presently oversees his off-grid medicinal herb farm while teaching biodynamic farming methods and ionization soil analysis. Now retired from clinical medical practice, he remains active in the internal martial arts, health consulting, creating formulations for his herbal company and developing innovative medical protocols based on the principles of waveform physics. To find out more about Bear Lando, please visit alphavedic.com. That's alphavedic.com. Bear, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. How are you, brother?
I'm doing wonderful. Thanks for the invite. Delighted to be here.
Now, I see you look like a surfer, and I hear you're a surfer from around the world. So many greetings to you, my fellow wave glider.
Ah, so you're a Grom as well?
An eternal Grom. Yeah. One of my favorite places to go is Fiji with the family and surf over at Cloudbreak and restaurants and those sort of places. But
Okay. A good friend of mine, Dylan Fish, runs the boats out there. We're all good friends in Hawaii. I have a good story about both Byron Bay and Fiji. In the 70s, my wife and myself were looking for that ultimate place to have our surfing lifestyle and raise our kids at the same time. So we were on our way to Byron Bay, of all places. And I always wanted to surf in Fiji. Now, this is before the days of Tavarua surf camp and everything. And we were kind of pioneers surfing in Fiji. So we stopped in Fiji and with full intention to go on to Byron Bay and look for a place to live permanently. And we never left Fiji. We loved it so much. So I almost became your neighbor there.
That's amazing, mate. Dylan is a very good friend of mine as well. So that's so funny.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, he's a good friend of the family. And my kids are friends of him as well because they all grew up together. And I'm still in touch with his mom and dad.
Beautiful. And we live just outside of Byron Bay. We're actually opening a cryotherapy clinic there this week with hyperbaric oxygen chamber and red light therapy and a host of other things as well.
Fantastic. I have some other friends in Byron Bay too, some that you know I heard through Mike. So even though I never made it there, I feel like I kind of lived there vicariously through a lot of our contacts.
Tell me about how what you've learned from surfing and what you've been able to take from that lifestyle and experience into your day-to-day life, and what's the message that the ocean gives you?
I always tell people that I learned more through surfing and sports than I ever did in school. And I did a lot of school. Surfing to me is, you know, first off, you're in the elements. You learn to turn off your brain and just get in touch with your surroundings and take the prompts that are coming at us all the time through our surroundings and put them to use. As you know, as a surfer, it's not a mental thing at all. You just kind of know when to do things. You know when to take off. You know when to make your bottom turn. And instinctively, you know, where I grew up in Northern California, surfing in very sharky water, we just also knew instinctively when to get out of the water. But no, surfing, I think, was my and continues to be the most important schoolroom of my life. And that's why I got both of my kids surfing. You know, they surf around the world to this day. You know, they're always taking Indo trips and chasing waves everywhere. And I was pushing them in the waves when they were about 5 years old.
Mm, well, I love that. And one of the beautiful things as well, what you said is the intuition or instinctiveness about when to get out of the water. But what I've also come to realize is that surfing has given me the opportunity to learn how to surrender into fear a great deal. And I'm just wondering if you've had that experience yourself, you know, that near-death experience and having to just surrender and trust into that.
Absolutely. You know, you learn to, rather than have fear dictate your life, you learn how to use it to your advantage. You know, you use it. Obviously, the ocean can be ominous and you need to respect it very much. But also, you know, if you get caught in the impact zone and have a near drowning experience, the best thing you can do is just to, you know, when you do pop back up, is paddle right back out and go for it again. You just have to put it behind you and you don't let it impede your life. And that's an amazing thing, especially when you get into big waves. You know, after Fiji, we decided to move to Hawaii. We thought it might be a better, maybe all-round place for the kids and afford them some opportunities. And back when we lived in Hawaii, it was more of a kind of in between third world and mainland, but maybe just a little bit more advantages than, you know, we had in Fiji. In Hawaii, I first started surfing in the 60s on North Shore, and you learn very quickly that it can be a very risky place to be out there. But that ability, I think, to just take risk and actually have a lot of fun in the process carries through in everything you do in life. I know it certainly has with us. And also what I think was very healthy about it is that my wife and myself adapted somewhat of a nomadic lifestyle over the years because we were always going to different parts of the globe and looking for waves and adventures. And we managed to have that as our priority and our family as our priority. And still we managed to fit in a thriving career at the same time. Whereas I think these days, people have a career and money come first, and then they look back before they know it. They say, what the heck did I do with my life? Whereas, you know, I can sit around with my kids, one of my kids with me right now, and we just reminisce about all the good times we've had, and we're still having good times, and we still surf with each other.
I love that. It is a great family sport and something that we can keep doing for a long time, which is why I love this lifestyle and this sport. In actual fact, I just started skateboarding again at the age of 46 on a half pipe. I'm going to keep doing that for as long as possible within my limits.
Yeah.
And I really want to talk to you today about some of the projects that and some of the areas of your special that you've specialized in. And we could probably do 20 podcasts together for the next couple of years. And I invite you to be able to do that with me because you've had a lifelong journey of gaining information and educating yourself and then translating that into how to teach that and how to live that in the world. Instead of just educating people, you actually walk the walk and talk the talk. And in that, where I'd love to go is, I guess, what's happening in the world at the moment. And what you specialize in is a biological terrain medicine and a whole lot more. And I'd love for you to give us an idea of, should we be fearful of a virus or any virus? And is there a different way of looking at this and looking at ourselves for that matter?
Absolutely. You know, bioterrain medicine is, I had certifications in the conventional side of medicine from Stanford Medical School. I went to a four-year naturopathic college and specialized in Chinese medicine and classical homeopathy. Later on, I actually finished chiropractic and I have a doctor of chiropractic as well. And I was in the pioneering circles of what we call clinical kinesiology. And we were making very deep inroads into another level of neurology and being able to communicate directly with the autonomic nervous system. And it got a lot of notoriety from doctors across the pond, particularly in Germany. They came over to learn with us and they proved it out themselves that what we were doing was real. And in the process, I was introduced by those German medical doctors to bioterrain medicine, and a whole new vista opened up to me. Bioterrain medicine is understanding that the human body is actually an ecosystem. And if you want to treat the body, you do not treat disease, because disease does not exist in nature. Pathogens, what we consider microbes that may be detrimental to our health, do not exist in nature. Nature only has processes that correct and balance. And of course, when we don't live to the natural patterns of nature, then nature does have a way of writing things. And then we mistakenly call that disease. Now, viruses are a theory. And viruses are, I think, there seems to be some evidence that they do exist, but what the conventional doctors don't understand is what we think of as virus are actually endogenous, in other words, produced within the body itself. I do certain kinds of testing when I treat people, and one of them, in the lab assays, we test the level of cell fragmentation, which tells us how quickly the body is breaking down and repairing itself. And if that cell fragmentation exceeds the repair, then you see these accumulating. And then that accumulation of cell debris actually triggers different mechanisms in the body. One of them is that these cell debris will actually use the machinery or the RNA of whole healthy cells and then behave very suspiciously like theoretical viruses behave. And another thing that, a colleague of mine and friend, Andrew Kaufman, who we've had on our podcast a couple times, and I slated to be on his podcast very soon, he explains very brilliantly exosomes, which are created within the cell and have a similar story as far as how these creatures created within the cell using the cellular RNA then are emptied into the bloodstream and trigger all sorts of regenerative processes and stem cell production and production of cytokines and interleukins and things that the body needs to heal itself. So I really believe that on one level, certain levels of the hierarchy know all this, and they foster the not only the viral theory, but the germ theory, in its totality, in order to control and sell their wares. But then a lot of us doctors going through medical school are really believing what we're taught. When I, was in school, I thought, hey, this is a good university and everything I learned here must be true. It's sure impressive. You're walking around billion-dollar institutions and all these white coats and technologies and things. And, it's very seductive to just believe everything hook, line, and sinker. So pathogens, as we think of them, are actually nature's recyclers. Just like in the external ecosystem, you might see a dead animal on the floor of the forest. And of course, you'll also see other insects and things laying their eggs and the larvae then eat up the carcass, and that's the way nature cleans house. It's the same thing within our body. If we have things that are diagnosed as pathogens, for instance, you might have a strep throat or staphylococcus, the seeds of those organisms in German medicine we call protids, and other people I studied with, like Gaston Naissons, he called them somatids. They live within us all the time. And when there's a cleaning job or some other necessary function that these guys do for us, then they progress through different stages, just like maybe a larvae of an insect, going through different forms, and maybe eventually, well, these guys, and you have the symptoms that we associate with a bacterial infection or a viral infection, what they're really doing is telling you is that there is a job to do and they're doing it for you. So what I learned as a physician is not to make war on these and give antibiotics and all that sort of thing that would actually impede that and then set people up for worse problems later on. Because when you kill these populations, now you're really vulnerable to worse things. But what we learn in bioterrain medicine is how to work with them, understand what they're trying to do, make their job easier, and above all, don't get in their way. And almost 100% of the time, things will go full circle very quickly. And when people are educated to this process and start living a proper lifestyle, then they don't even have to have these occasional flus and colds and infections in the first place, because they're doing what these microbes would otherwise have to do for us.
Thank you for explaining that. When you speak about a lifestyle that is in alignment with us, what does that mean? Because, for instance, in Australia at the moment, I mean, it's a very politically charged environment and very emotionally charged environment. We have celebrities just this week being paid by the government to come onto our TV screens, our most loved Australian comedic celebrities, saying that you need to stay inside, you need to wear your mask, you need to social distance, you need to do this. And to me, that doesn't seem like living. That seems like basically dying in a very controlled manner. So when you talk about living a lifestyle, what does that mean? What does that recipe look like for you? And what do you teach people about?
Well, the first thing of import is our mental and emotional hygiene. And of course, top of the list with that is living fear-free, which is the reason why we are deliberately fed fear from every institution, whether it's medicine, geopolitics. You know, there's always somebody laying in wait to pounce on us to make us sick, or some kind of terrorist that's going to blow something up, when in fact, the majority of that is just false from the start and used to control us. And, we get a lot into our work, with Alpha Vedic and our podcast, talking about waveform physics. And without getting into a long discussion about that, it brings us really face to face with the fact that the only creative force in the universe are thought. We live in a thought-based universe, and thought is the only thing that can possibly create the electrical vectors that then nuance into all the three-dimensional aspects of what we think of our physical selves, as well as our external environment. So it's most important just to get our internal house in order and just to chip away at the reasons why we fear things in the first place. So I'd say with our kids, for instance, we homeschooled them because we didn't want them subjected to the school system, because they start real early with getting our kids in the whole brainwashing. And then we never had a television. We didn't shelter the kids from life, but we just afforded them every opportunity to develop their own intellect and their own critical thought processes. And then also on the emotional level, understanding that what makes thoughts create those electrical vectors with a sufficient intensity to pop into our reality in the first place, that is where emotions come in. They give the velocity to those electrical vectors so that they will outpicture in our reality. So top of the list there is get your internal self in order, clean up your thoughts. If you at the end of a day, do a little bit of inventory, you always want to be on the plus side of thinking double plus thoughts rather than all the negative stuff and worries and concerns that most people have. And then, of course, when you're in that state of mind, in that state of with less toxic emotion running through your body, that is going to make every cell in your body happier. than all the health food or exercise or anything that you could possibly do externally. But it also just happens to put you in a state of consciousness where you reach for healthy food. You just have a natural propensity to want to exercise, be in fresh air, jump and play, grow things, do productive things, and walk around with a smile and just have a lot less judgment about your fellow travelers on the planet. So that's where I'd start.
I love it. And it resonates with me very deeply that I've been a chef for 30 odd years as one of the hats that I wear. And one of the things that I've been fortunate enough to do is speak to people like yourself and other wonderful philosophers, I would call them, about human existence. And as far as one of my gifts that I see them, or one of my strengths, is to be able to take that information and sort of channel it into delicious, beautiful food. And I always say it's just one of the things, but if you don't have your emotional garden blooming in love and light and unity and all of these wonderful ways in which we can think about ourselves and everybody else, then all the organic food in the world may not be the answer for you. You know, it's funny, you know, and I can't help but agree with you that when you actually are clear in the mind and you have got purpose, that the good food flows, the exercise flows without actually making it a chore. And I'm so grateful that you explained that. I also know that you're a keen person that studies and works with bees. And I actually did a post this morning, funnily enough, about, so Bill Gates this week on his website, he released a video, a very small video, showing the world's deadliest killer, apparently, which is mosquitoes. And from my understanding, one of his companies has worked with another company and they've passed a bill or passed a law where they're going to release genetically modified mosquitoes, 750 million of them, into the environment, I think in January 2021. I could be completely wrong about that, but this is what I've heard. Now, from your viewpoint, what does a genetically modified mosquito have, or what is the thought behind that in relation to how bees work? And I guess I'm sort of bridging something here, but I feel like you might be able to share with us your knowledge about bees and the insect world and why genetically modified insects may be a recipe for disaster.
Sure. Yeah, I'm a longtime beekeeper, and the type of beehives that I use are called Waray hives, or they're top bar hives. So what that means is conventional beekeeping, they have panels and they require going in and out of the hive quite a bit in order to produce as much honey as possible. And in the process, you ruin the propolis seal that the bees use to seal their hive and, you know, just keep foreign invaders and things out and all the things they need to do to keep themselves healthy. And when you're a beekeeper also, you're constantly, in the conventional sense that is, you're constantly trying to prevent a new queen bee from forming. And the way you do that is you open up your hives, you look at the panels, and there's just a characteristic where you see that within the brood, if it looks a certain way, you know that that's a potential queen. So you get rid of that, because you don't want multiple queens, because the new queen will someday take a hike and take a swarm with it. So they want to maintain not only high honey production for commercial reasons, but also prevent the bees from swarming. Now, with the top bar hive, it doesn't require opening up and disturbing the hive all the time. And it allows the bees to, instead of conforming to a panel to make their honeycombs and produce honey, you let them do it in a free-form way where it just hangs naturally like it would from the inside of a tree or something. And then also, if I always let new queens form, because I love it when I saw a whole swarm just taking off and, you know, leaving my space and going somewhere else, because you're populating the pollinators elsewhere and you just have enough stragglers that leave behind, and then they create a whole new brood and pretty soon you're repopulated again. And especially if you have multiple hives, you don't care anyway. So it's good for the environment. It's better for the bees. You have healthy bees. Your honey production is good, maybe not as much as the other stuff. But again, you're working with nature's normal processes. You're interfering less with their normal processes. And maybe it's a good model for how our government should work, just to kind of let us alone and do our own thing. And in the long run, we'd all be a lot happier. So you have a lot to learn, I believe, from bees. The second part of your question, genetically modified. What we have to understand, everything that we're being exposed to now, which is culminating in the real prize for the controllers, which is forced vaccines, which we were telling people 40 years ago was coming down the road. And 20 years ago, we knew for sure through our circles, because I travel in certain circles and interact with people that work in high levels of intelligence. And that's kind of a long story how that happened. But they were telling us at least 20 years ago that in this exact year, there would be a staged biological event that would be used to centralize government in fewer hands, to bring in a cashless economy, and also to bring in forced vaccines. And the reason why they're so intent on forcing vaccines is because they are genetically modifying the human genome. And if you understand that DNA are actually antennas, dual impedance antennas, actually. You know, I use these in my work myself, instruments to test waveforms from human DNA so that we can treat people at their source. But each DNA strand is an antenna, and the human DNA, you know, we've got 23 pairs of chromosomes. And by the way, chromosome number 8 has coincidentally the same genetic sequencing as what we're being told is COVID-19. So COVID-19 is actually the same genetics as human genetics, which means everybody can test positive. Okay, so that's a different story. The reason why they want to genetically modify us is if they inject foreign DNA into our DNA strands from insects and animals, then it limits the human bandwidth and makes us more like herd animals. It makes it less possible to tune into, let's just say, for lack of a better term, tuning into higher realms of consciousness, which really make humans distinct from other animals and insects. The only problem is if you leave humans alone to do that, they're harder to control. So that's back to square one again. It's all about control. And if there really was a virus the way we're taught, then the only way it could get in your body in the first place is through injection. Because if you were to, say, touch a doorknob with alleged DNA from a virus on it, or eat some food with it on it, or airborne, like they say, there's no way it could possibly survive the natural defenses we have, especially our gastric juices that would dissolve those proteins in less than a second. So it has to be conjugated with some live cellular material that has the proper RNA DNA, and it has to be injected into us in order to, you know, bypass all those defenses. And that is where vaccines come in. That's where genetically modified mosquitoes might come in. Geez, they just happen to have the ability to inject their saliva into us, and they are carriers, I'm convinced, of DNA that they want to get into the human genome. That's also why they created different pathogens such as Lyme's. It's nothing more than modified syphilis, and then purposely introduced that to flea populations because, again, ticks, and then ticks have the same ability to get that into your bloodstream by boring a hole into your skin. Now, that's a little bit of a speculation on my part as far as the mosquitoes, but it seems to be consistent with everything else they're doing.
My family and I have been using beautiful, high-quality essential oils for the last 20 years to live healthily every single day. Now, if you're passionate about health and are ready to step into leadership, I want to invite you to partner with my team and I to build a beautifully successful doTERRA business. Register at PeteHLC.com/Pete. That's PeteHLC, which stands for the Healthy Living Collective, .com/Pete. Wow. Okay. Oh, thank you for sharing that. It's so interesting. I've had quite a few friends that I would deem highly intelligent and open thinkers over the last few months that have actually emailed me and said, because I've been quite open about this going, I think it's a hoax. I think it's a scam. I think this whole thing is, it doesn't make any sense. And they've come to me and said, Pete, you're completely wrong. This is the real deal. This is a pandemic that's affecting people and people are dying from this. I'm like, it just doesn't make any sense. And they're like, how can the whole world be in on this? And sometimes I don't have the answer for that. I really don't. I'm like, part of me wants to believe in humanity and that this couldn't be playing out. Yet every day I see, especially here in Australia, it's like we're shutting down the country because of something that really doesn't seem to affect anybody.
Well, the whole world is in on it, even us, when we participate by being obedient, wearing our mask, and not holding bureaucrats that are doing the wet work for the controllers responsible. We just go along because, after all, you can't fight City Hall. And here we are. There is a time in this country, in America, you know, I have a little bit of longevity behind me. You know, I've been around for 7 decades plus. And when I was a kid, the population wouldn't have stood for this for 2 seconds. They would have just told, politicians where to get off. There would have been open rebellion. They wouldn't have had a chance. So that is why they took generations to patiently through the public school system and all the other things they do to our kids to indoctrinate the kids. Now we have, you know, a populace, not just in America, but all over the planet, in Europe, the Commonwealth countries, where the youth has been brainwashed from day one. Now, in my vocation in medicine, of course, not all the doctors are in on it or evil plotters. We just don't know any better ourselves. And just like the rest of the population, we accept what we're told. And then there's great incentive to do that too, because if we do break from the fold, then we're blackballed and, you know, kiss your all that hard work and your career goodbye. You know, I experienced that personally. I suffered greatly financially and actually, you know, saw some of my colleagues die along the way. And I've, you know, had a few threats thrown my way as well for getting out and speaking the truth, or just daring to do things different, especially treating people that are diagnosed with incurable diseases and then see them get better most of the time. So, you know, I always had to practice under the radar, so to speak. And, you know, we had a very large clinic that became very well known, but we were always on private property and people came in as consenting adults from all over the world. And we just had an agreement that this is what we were going to do. And people came to us for that. We never hung our shingle up in a commercial zone, because when you're out there in the normal commercial zone, they expect you to adhere to the laws of commerce. And of course, those laws of commerce carry with it certain contracts. And when you get thrown in jail for supposedly breaking the law, what you're really getting thrown in jail for is breach of contract. So we were just always careful along the way with all our affairs, especially our practice, to not have a contract to be in breach of in the first place. And we could never get accused of treating cancer or making any claims of the such, because we understood that things such as cancer, MS, were biological responses to something else, and then we would treat what the body was responding to that was mistaken for disease. And so there was nothing to make claims of. There was nothing to brag about, oh, we're curing something, because we knew that those things never existed in the first place. So the population at large, yeah, we're all participating in it in one level or the other. But there are people, not just the old bloodlines and all that kind of stuff that, that a lot of us like to research and discover more about. And by the way, you know, a lot of my clients in the past were from such circles because they don't dare go to conventional doctors. They know better. But they work through a lot of cutouts, and those are our institutions. And then those institutions train the gatekeepers. They train accountants and, you know, tax preparers and lawyers, barristers, and medical doctors to keep up the company byline and keep everybody in line. And the best way for them to train people to do that is to make sure that they believe in the company line themselves. And then, of course, you have the bureaucratic class, which is really the parasitic class. And a lot of them are knowing very much what they're doing, but they're either compromised in some way or bought off or some such thing, because in that realm, they know what they're doing. They darn well know what they're doing. And I know for a fact, having been through the judiciary process many times just to test out certain things that we thought we were learning and just, you know, wanted to know the truth, if we're on the right track or not, we found out firsthand that, you know, when you go in front of magistrates and prosecuting attorneys, they know everything, and they'll even admit it to your face if they know that you know. So yeah, it's an interesting situation we find ourselves in for right now, for sure.
Yeah. That's what keeps coming back to me, especially politicians in Australia. It seems like they're very uncomfortable with speaking, and it seems either they have been compromised or they're in a position where they're stuck. I mean, that's the energetic feeling I get when I watch these people, is they're stuck between they're stuck and they've got to keep going with the narrative because somebody's got either some dirt on them or there's a big carrot that they're following. And this is just my personal opinion, but energetically, that's what I feel. And you know, my dog agrees, or our dog agrees with that too. So the other thing that I wanted to talk to you about today was my wife and I have just yesterday bought a new property that we are looking at turning into a sanctuary to be able to be self-sufficient, self-sustainable. And I know that's been a huge part of your journey as well. And I wanted to ask you about that, how empowering that is, because I feel like what is happening at the moment, this is going to drive people that are thinking about a new way of life and living for themselves and their family. It's nearly an invitation, like the invitation is now for people to re-educate themselves and re-empower themselves to look after themselves as once we used to be able to do. So tell me about your journey into being off the grid and self-sustainable as much as possible. And what are the pros? What are the cons? Why do you believe that this, without putting words into your mouth, but this could be the most beautiful thing that comes from this?
Well, it's like surfing. It's learning to live with the elements, respect the elements, and live with the earth rather than on it, as the old saying goes. And it wasn't much of a leap for my wife and myself, because within our family background, you know, there's ranchers and dairy ranch on my side and cattle ranch on her side. Now, my ancestors were recent arrivals from Italy and on my mom's side, Peru. So they, you know, we always had the family garden. We always grew our own food. By the way, I'd love to talk about food and you know, just growing up with Italian cuisine and, you know, cooking is one of my favorite pastimes. And it is an art, and we really adhere to the aesthetics and the taste. And, you know, it's not just about filling up a space in your stomach, you know, it's a big deal. It's a cultural thing. But as far as the off-grid lifestyle, my wife and myself, we've lived off-grid in several locations in Northern California before we moved to the islands. And then in Hawaii, we lived off-grid again, had a 12-acre plantation and had everything growing, you know, solar and, you know, no power around. And when we elected to come back to the mainland a few years back, We developed One Land off grid, botanical gardens. It became a destination that people just love to come and visit and walk around. And we kind of outgrew that spot. We needed more space because we were going full scale into medicinal herb production. And that's where we're at now. So we're in our fourth year here. And I'd say the nearest power line is maybe an hour away downstream. We live on the river. We source our water from river, and we're also surrounded by mountains here. And there's springs, you know, everywhere you look. So it's a place of great abundance. It's not hard to live off grid here. And just there's a certain purity too, which is why we grow our herbs and also our food here. Just the soil is wonderful. It's never been contaminated. They're fed by pure spring water. And to answer your question, though, it's extremely empowering, because especially in light of what's going on in the world right now. And fact is we're looking at some, not just potential, but some real food shortages coming down the road. And, you know, Venezuela was a beta test for what they're doing to the rest of the Western world right now. And you're going to see a lot of chaos in the cities relative to services and especially food. And, you know, we didn't move here or adapt this lifestyle out of fear. We just do it because there's a certain elegance to off-grid living that you don't get living on the grid. And, you know, it's labor intensive, absolutely. And a lot of people wouldn't consider it because of that. But we consider it a luxury. Just we live in our own private park. We have all the food we need outside. You've got salmon and steelhead running up the river. There's an abundance of game, you know, if you're into hunting and that sort of thing. We have fruits and vegetables. And so it's extremely gratifying, not just that you're providing for yourself and the measure of self-sufficiency that gives you, but it really fosters, again, just that ability to live with nature and really respect your surroundings, because we have an electrical system from solar panels. And by the way, we can also do a lot better than solar panels. And I work also with some people that are next level beyond that. But at least solar panels give you that independence as opposed to living on the grid. So it really allows you to just kind of meld with your surroundings and be part of them. And you don't take anything for granted. If, you know, if we're turning the lights on, you know, we have that, but we know what it takes, especially if it's a cloudy day that we might have to recharge the batteries, you know, with a generator, which we don't like to do if we use too much power. So you just become conscious of your footprint on the land and everything around you. And it's just a matter of mutual respect. I think that's what we're lacking in today's world. Not only do we feel entitled and take things for granted, but there's absolutely no respect. And we just are pretty much sure that our next meal is going to be available, you know, at the deli whenever we go down there. And that's not going to be necessarily true in the near future. And I think living off grid prepares you for every opportunity, especially just developing yourself as a member in the ecosystem and respecting all of life around you.
That is so beautiful. The next part I want to ask you about is the medicinal herbs. And why are these medicinal herbs such a focus for you and your family and your business at the moment? And what have you learned about these miraculous parts of nature, and why do you revere them so much?
Herbs are, and all plants for that matter, are the analog partners of humanity. They give off oxygen, we give off carbon dioxide. There's a nice symbiotic relationship there. And also, they are the analog archetypes of every aspect of humanity. So when I do herbology, for instance, I don't look at all the information I learned in earlier years as far as what we call monogram in herbology, which list all the actions and counterindications of herbs and, you know, when you might take it, you know, which is more of an academic endeavor. And there's efficacy to that, and you need to know that. But you learn firsthand, especially when you grow herbs. Every herb has a personality. And when you're growing them, you get to know things well beyond books. So if somebody comes to me and says, hey, I've got this situation, do you have an herb I can take? I'm not mentally going through a list of things, you know, relative to what herbs treat that condition. I'm really reading the energetics of that person and then simultaneously matching the energetics or the personality of a particular plant to the personality of the person. That is old world alchemy. And, you know, when you say alchemy or discussing those terms, to a lot of people, it sounds suspiciously airy-fairy or just kind of primitive, but in fact, it's the most advanced level of science possible. Because when you get beyond just reading the energetics, you realize that these are real waveform energetics that can be measured from those plants. So if I really want to get fancy and go more in depth with a person, I'm going to read their DNA with a dual impedance antenna, which is going to tell me the, you know, every body is a composite of trillions and trillions of electrical vectors. Every cell is a product of that and so forth. So when you're reading the DNA of a person, you're really reading the composite of electrical vectors that makes them a universe within themselves. And when you get into work such as Walter Russell and people that understood this very well and brought it to the world, you realize that these are the primal creative forces actually put out there by us that create not only our bodies, but our entire reality. So when I read the waveforms, I can tell the symmetry in all the different dimensions and where that symmetry is off. And then, for instance, take plant matter from a particular herb and see which one of those herbs is going to return the symmetry and therefore the health to that person. So it takes you more out of that mental plane and you go right to the source and you're doing exactly what they were doing thousands of years ago when Chinese medicine practitioners were creating these formulas and they were doing it by energetic compatibility rather than chemistry. And the original alchemists from Europe, who later had to escape to the Middle East and the Greece and places like that because they were starting to be persecuted by the folks that wanted to bring in more of a reductionist scientific method, they very well knew exactly what I'm talking about and approached things in the same way. And through the work of people like Walter Russell, these days we can actually prove this out with instrumentation and not only learn a lot about ourselves, because in the process you realize, wow, this is actually a product of my own consciousness. And when you work on that level, not only are you not trying to reverse engineer something, you know, it's like reverse engineering a Swiss watch by looking at one gear. That's what we're doing with medicine, the way it's practiced, even in holistic circles. What you do instead is go upstream to those primal forces that are putting all that stuff in motion in the first place, and you treat there. And it brings you face to face with yourself as a creator of your own reality. And a nice little bonus in the process is your body does a lot better at the same time.
I want to come and sit with you. I might have to swim, or I'll paddle my surfboard over to see you. But there's something that you're about to launch from my understanding, and it's been in mine and my wife's awareness for some time, is the word spagyric. And I'd love a definition of that for people that have never heard of that, if you don't mind, if that's not too much to ask of you.
Absolutely. You know, spagyricism is what we typically, people that have heard that term before, associate with plant medicine. But again, you have to go back to the original alchemist. And alchemy, again, is a blend of philosophy and observation, which is true science. And of course, what they've done with reductionist science is they've taken the philosophy out of it. So there's no glue to hold the parts together. You know, it's like an endeavor without any pathway or any motive other than just getting lost forest through the tree or trees through the forest. Spagyricism was originally intended to understand yourself and to develop yourself into those higher realms of consciousness. And those same techniques were then applied to the preparation of plant medicine. Now, spagyricism, rather than taking maybe a solvent like alcohol and throwing some plant matter in it that we call macerate and letting it sit for a few months to extract the essence out of the plant, and then taking that, which, you know, is wonderful and you get a lot of good things from that, but it's not whole plant medicine and it's not going to work on all levels of your being as well. So when you appreciate that those plants, again, are archetypes for certain realms of human characteristics in the first place that then can do wonderful things on many levels of your being, what you do is you make a wine. This is what I do. I make a wine out of the herbs. For instance, our signature crop here is Jiao Gulan. We grow a lot of other things, ashwagandha and ashitaba. And I mean, you know, we could go on and on, but that's our signature crop. So what I'll do with the Jiao Gulan is I'll make a wine out of it. It takes a few months and I'll maybe get the alcohol level up to about 9%. And then I put it through a whole bunch of successive distillations to get that alcohol level way higher, which then allows you to use the spirits. And there's a reason why spirits are still used to, yeah, it's a terminology for alcohol to this day. It comes from old alchemy. You know, we a lot of times fail to realize the origin of a lot of words. And, you know, there's three aspects of ourselves. That's, you know, the spirit, which is, you know, more the larger domain of humanity. Then you have the essence, which is kind of the individual soul level that makes you distinct from other members of humanity. And then you have the salt. You know, you're talking about mercury, sulfur, and salt. And the salt is like the body. So when we take the spirits made from the herb that you want to make a medicine out of in the first place, then you take fresh plant matter from that same botanical specimen, in this case, Jiao Gulan, and then you tincture the essence out of it with the spirit from that plant in the first place. And then when you're through, when the plant matter is spent and you've got the essence out of it, kind of the soul of that individual botanical specimen, then you take that plant matter, you don't throw it away. What you do is you put it through a kiln process, you reduce it to soluble alkaline minerals from that plant, and then you mix that back in with the spirit and the essence of the plant. And when you take it, it not only works on your physical body, it works on your spiritual being, it works on the soul level as well. And there's a lot of other levels of spagyricism, and it'll be quite a lengthy conversation, that just do amazingly remarkable things. And I have things in the work here, you know, at our little lab, where it'll take several years just to make a certain spagyric medicine that is going to be so powerful that only a couple drops of it will put somebody through great changes.
Mm, thank you so much for sharing that. And can we replace fluoride with a multi an expanded consciousness spagyric for the whole planet right now?
Wouldn't that be wonderful? And again, it's not just coincidence that they put fluoride in the water, because the first thing it does is it calcifies your pineal and shuts down your bandwidth of perception. So I don't think it's a coincidence that everything they do, from treating our water to medicines and vaccines, it all does the same thing. It limits our perception and therefore our ability to jump the octaves through human experience.
I love that, jumping the octaves of human experience. I would love to finish off with, I don't want you to be a fortune teller because that's not an appropriate thing, but where are we going from here? Where do you see humanity over the next 5 or 10 years or even further, or even in the next year? I mean, you must have contemplated this for quite some time. And is there a solution in this? And if there is, what would you encourage people to do or invite them to do?
I'm not just an optimist, but I really believe there's ample evidence that what we're going through is leading us to a new, you know, I don't want to say new age, it sounds kind of trite, but really a new realm of human experience. And we've been here before on this planet, and there are certain reasons why we seemingly went backwards, you know, at different historical points. There have been civilizations in much greater advance than where we're at today. And there's also reasons that coincide with larger universal cycles, we'll say, that would explain very clearly why we've had this back and forth experience and why now, in particular, we are embarking on, you know, not just an individual being able to jump an octave in consciousness, but why humanity as a whole is doing that. And what we think of as negative, and boy, it's intense out there. And I think it's going to be a real nail biter for, you know, the next few months and maybe a few years. But, you know, what we're seeing is all the stuff that needs to be cleansed, just like within nature, when we need the recyclers to come in and clean up the forest floor, or the recycles in our own body to clean up our own act. That's what's happening with us in general. And, you know, when I would treat bodies in my career years, we'd see people, they'd come in with very serious conditions. And, you know, in the beginning stages of therapy, you'd sometimes swear that people are getting worse. But what we understood is that you're driving all of what needs to be healed to the surface, and all those issues that are creating the problems being driven to the surface. And I think it's doing twofold. It's getting everything out for a great cleansing, a collective cleansing, if you will. And at the same time, it's really letting the cat out of the bag, because as many people, you know, it's frustrating. You know, I don't go into town much, but when I do and I see, even up in our neck of the woods, and we're pretty rural, even when you go into the closest town, now you see everybody masked up and you just, boy, it makes you want to lose hope that people are just being this dumb about things. On the other hand, you know, there's more and more people waking up because of this process. And I think that's what it is. So it's really a wake up call. A lot of people are hearing it. Of course, we all have to make individual decisions. And I believe also, just like in past historical points, there are segments of humanity that will remain asleep out of their own volition, and they may not be around much longer, but nobody can save us from ourselves. But for people that care to wake up, there's ample, let's just say, impetus now to really get on our A game, really go inside. And already, because of the things that I'm personally involved with in the circles that I travel in, we've got the solutions for everything to heal our bodies, to provide free energy for the entire planet, to heal our ecosystem, to have healthy topsoil for future generations, to have nutritious, high-energy food. It's all here right now, but we've just got to get over this hump. And I believe that's the time we're going through right now. And I think a lot of us that, you know, like yourself, you're doing amazing things. It's no coincidence that you're talking to, you know, I've seen some of your guest lists, just impressive people that you talk to every day. It's no coincidence that you're doing what you're doing. And all of us that are trying to awaken are doing our little part. And that is a powerful thing, not just because we're finding each other, but we're drafting the larger patterns in the universe. And when you get there, it's just like catching a wave. You've got the entire ocean at your back, and it's going to be a fun ride from here on. So I feel good about things.
What a beautiful way to finish off. Beautiful conversation as well. I'll use that word beautiful because I think you are beautiful, my brother. And it is no coincidence that we have managed to meet and have this connection. And I appreciate the words that you said as well, because at the moment, I was speaking to my wife yesterday about it. I said, it's the connections that I'm making at the moment and others are making. It's flowing so easily. And I am unemployed at the moment, so to speak, but at the same time, I have a lot of time to connect with like-minded people and learn from them and share their information. And I'm so grateful for what is happening at the moment. And I'm so grateful for people like you who have walked this path and surfed this path for their whole life. And Yeah, I just want to tell you I love you. Thank you so much for your time, brother. And I can't wait to see what you bring out into the world in the coming months and years. And let's catch a wave together and share a cup of tea one day too, my friend.
I would enjoy that immensely. And thanks again so much. I'm honored to be with you. And who knows, maybe I'll see you over there someday. I'll finally get to Byron Bay, and I've got other friends to visit over there too.
We would love that. Thank you, brother. Have a wonderful day.
Hey, you too. Take care of yourself.
If you would like to become a qualified health coach, then the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, or IIN for short, can help you achieve your goals. I completed their health coaching course many years ago, which has been one of the catalysts for my own journey into what I now love to do, which is to help people achieve greater health through the sharing of information through my books, seminars, podcasts, TV shows, and films. I recommend IIN for anyone wishing to pursue a career in the health coaching and wellness space. IIN is a one-year course, so that if you're a full-time worker, busy parent, or wherever you are in your life, it is flexible enough so you'll be able to complete all the required curriculum. Please see the link included in the podcast show notes or my website to access the free sample class and first module of their program. This will give you a great taste of the format as well as the structure, and you can also utilize my special discount that I can offer you if you decide to sign up. Make sure you tell the admissions team that you're part of the Pete Evans Tuition Savings to claim your very substantial discount. Please visit integrativenutrition.com or email admissions@integrativenutrition.com.
The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.